Welcome to JFK Spotlight on Health, where we highlight the groundbreaking work being done at JFK University Medical Center in Edison. It's part of the Hackensack Meridian Health Network. Our very special guest today is Dr. Anna Carmela S. Girinella, pediatric rheumatologist at Hackensack Meridian Children's Health's Joseph M. Sanzari Children's Hospital, K. Hovnanian Children's Hospital, and JFK Pediatric Multispecialty Clinic, and assistant professor of pediatrics and faculty at the Hackensack Meridian School of Medicine. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning. Thank you for having me here today.
Thank you. After that introduction, I think we're out of time.
I'm afraid so. No.
No. Thank you for joining me. My name is Joel Katz, if you're just tuning in. And let's start with you're a pediatric rheumatologist. I don't think I've ever heard those two put together. So pediatric rheumatologist, what is it?
Yeah, no, thanks for asking that. I will tell you that even in the clinic, as I'm about to see a patient, that is a common question that the parent says that my pediatrician or my provider sent me here today to see you, but I don't know what to do. So thanks for asking that, because that is a common question. So yeah. A pediatric rheumatologist is a pediatrician who really received further training in the diagnosis, the detection, and the treatment of specific diseases, commonly autoimmune diseases and musculoskeletal diseases, right? Mm-hmm. So, and then the next question automatically would be, well, what is an autoimmune disease? Right. So an autoimmune disease is a condition where, you know, how our body has its own line of defense, the immune system, that protects us from other things such as infections, you know, but sometimes it does its work maybe too much that it starts to turn against that person's own body. And when it does that, it creates a lot of inflammation. So that can manifest a lot of times as a musculoskeletal disease. Now, on the flip side, we also see quite a significant proportion of children who don't just have an inflammatory condition or that autoimmune disease condition that we talked about. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it is more, you know, full-on musculoskeletal mechanical pains or other instances that can cause chronic pain, such as amplified musculoskeletal pains, a common type of which maybe perhaps a lot of your audience may have heard about is fibromyalgia, which apparently mm-hmm. happens in children too.
That happens in children as well. Well, what's the most common reason that a child would be sent to see you?
Definitely. A most common reason for providers referring their patients or children to me would be unexplained joint pains or chronic or recurring joint pains, unexplained recurrent or prolonged fevers, or sometimes they just have like some unexplained lab findings that tells there must be inflammation somewhere and they can't figure out. And of course, it is not uncommon that we see patients who come in with concerns like, oh, my aunt, my uncle, or I myself have this condition. I'm just concerned, is this something my child has? Because I've seen this type of, some of these type of symptoms in my own child.
So they want to come and see you even though there's no symptoms whatsoever. They just want to check.
Yeah, so that last you know, subset of families, if they themselves, like the parents, have one of these autoimmune disease conditions, and perhaps there's even just a hint of, you know, concern, I am happy to see them because, unfortunately, some of these conditions do tend to have some sort of genetic or hereditary component.
And you would be able to tell without any type of symptoms or pain, inflammation, you just tell if it's hereditary?
So that's the cool thing. That's the cool thing of our with our specialty, right? So as a rheumatologist, I don't have ownership of just one organ. I do see and treat the child as a whole, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not like I'm just specializing on the brain, not specializing on the heart, specializing on the lungs. Those are our other colleague pediatric subspecialists, right? Mm-hmm. So I see the patient as a whole. And, you know, interestingly, a lot of our conditions are mainly diagnosed based on specific sets of clinical symptoms or exam findings that we see. So like in that initial visit, chances are I can tell quite a bit. Of course, we always have these lab tests and blood work to aid us, but a lot of pediatric rheumatic diseases, are mainly clinically diagnosed.
Okay. Would it be something that maybe it is something that the child has without symptoms yet, but it is hereditary, as you said. So is it possible that you wouldn't be able to detect anything because it's so dormant?
Yeah, so, you know, that's the interesting thing, right? So what I want to emphasize is rheumatic conditions in general, especially in children, are rather rare. Although right. there is, they say, according to recent figures, approximately, say, for example, 300,000 children and teens in the U.S. right now suffering from the juvenile form of arthritis. But as I said, some of these labs can act as aids to let us know, well, is there some sort of factor or potential risk that this child might develop into that? But I want to emphasize also that since it is rather rare, sometimes it is something that we have to monitor for, mm-hmm. or sometimes we can, like I said, we can tell a lot in that initial visit, and we can definitely put the parents' minds at ease to say, you know what, we don't necessarily see these red flags, but, you know, depending on, say, their family history, or maybe depending on the blood work that the pediatrician ran, we can say, well, we're happy to monitor, you know, your child mm-hmm. as we go forward. But yes, you're right. There definitely is some, you know, interesting way that, you know, that just speaking with that family, seeing that child, we do get a whole lot of clues with that first visit.
Talking with Dr. Anna Carmela S. Girinella, pediatric rheumatologist at Hackensack Meridian Health. I think that many of our listeners will be surprised that kids do get some, you know, autoimmune diseases or musculoskeletal diseases that you wouldn't think they would, like arthritis.
Yeah, so you know what, and you know, I don't blame them. Like when you hear arthritis, you think of your grandmother who mm-hmm. with like the curled up hands who can't, you know, like or you think about, you know, arthritis, you know, an old person disease. And not to offend anyone, but yeah. So they said, what, kids get arthritis too? So so what is arthritis? So simply put, arthritis is a condition where you have inflammation in your joints, right? So it's not enough to say, oh, I have joint pain, therefore I have arthritis. But we're actually talking about actual inflammation that could be manifested as a swelling in a joint, increased warmth or fluid or fullness in that joint, or stiffness and inability to, you know, really fully move that joint the way it should be. So oftentimes, kids with arthritis, they're not complaining, saying, ouch, you know, this knee hurts. But oftentimes, the parents will start to notice, you know, they have a funny limp. Or maybe in the morning, they're not as fast as they were, like, you know, bolting out, running, and getting mm-hmm. up from bed. They might actually even use the words, why are you moving like an old person? So unfortunately, although it is still in the grand scheme of pediatric, you know, diseases that affect our children, still relatively rare. As I said, you know, there is quite a bit of prevalence of juvenile arthritis in our country.
Have you had any experiences or any situations where a child has inflammation and joint pain, but it's not arthritis?
Yes. So definitely, as we said, those autoimmune diseases or those conditions that for some reason the immune system is just revved up and trying to fight the person's own body. A lot of these autoimmune disease conditions, again, produce inflammation and might affect the joints, but might affect other organs as well. So, you know, there is also that other condition that would also happen in kids, for example, lupus. And again, a whole host of other rheumatic diseases can manifest with aches and pains and inflammation.
Okay, so let me just go through a list now, because there are certain diseases that most consider adult-related but may also be found in children. Let me mention some, and you could tell us if it's common in kids. You could share any other info you have as well, but if it's common in kids, or you could say, you know, maybe it's something that, oh yeah, that's definitely more common in adults, but it can be found in kids, or maybe it's not found in kids at all. So let's start with fibromyalgia.
Yeah, so, you know, interestingly, so again, right, I want to give the disclosure that I am a pediatric rheumatologist, so most of the time, by the time someone refers someone to me that there's some unexplained thing. But as a pediatric rheumatologist, fibromyalgia comprises a significant proportion of the type of patients we see. So it is quite common. And unfortunately, it is rather, you know, unfortunately, rather increasing in incidence and prevalence. I think, unfortunately, it does go hand in hand with other things, you know, plaguing our children, such as, you know, rising rates of inactivity, obesity, rising rates of mood disorders, such as depression, anxiety, further exacerbated by the pandemic. So, unfortunately, I hate to say it, but yes, it is rather common that I'm seeing it in my clinic.
And what exactly is it?
So fibromyalgia, it's usually manifested with some unexplained chronic pain and usually rather diffuse pain. It might start out at one site or one body area, and then it pretty much spreads to the rest of the body. What's actually wrong in fibromyalgia is that your nerves continually are sending signals to the brain that something hurts. Now, of course, you might say, well, that's what nerves are supposed to do. That's right. So, for example, you have an ankle sprain. You twist your ankle. The nerves in that ankle is going to send messages all the way up, you know, from the peripheral nerves to your spine to your brain to say, ouch, you know, that ankle's injured, so that your brain tells the rest of your body, well, don't move that ankle so you don't injure it further. But then the normal sort of evolution or history of things would be once that ankle sprain's pretty healed, the nerves are going to go send signals back to your brain like, oh, so we're in a good position, we're okay. And the brain says, okay, you're good, go run, do your normal stuff. But in fibromyalgia, that normal sort of talk between your nerves and your brain is altered. And the nerves there just keep sending signals to your brain that it hurts. And then the way that nerves are in our body, it's just like, if you can imagine like a series of networks, like, you know, cobwebs, right? Like they're all kind of overlapping. And so soon, like nerves in distant body parts will catch that signal. Soon the patient starts to feel pain elsewhere. And since this is primarily, you know, nerves that have gone wrong, it's not uncommon that these patients also tend to have sort of these tendencies to have other conditions that have to do with the with the nervous system, such as, you know, what we said, those, you know, mood disorders like depression, anxiety, because it's just one system.
You mentioned lupus. Now, that's my understanding is that that is something that usually starts out as a childhood disease, or is that a misconception?
To clarify that, it is commonly picked up during the pubertal teen years, adolescent years, all the way to the young adult years. And it's interesting because scientists have found that the hormonal changes going on during those years act as a major stressor on the immune system. So there is that interesting, association of that change in terms of the hormonal levels in a person's life and how that can stress and even induce your immune system to turn against your body.
Now, is there anything parents can do to prevent it?
So that's an interesting question, right? Like, unfortunately, as with a lot of these chronic diseases, especially inflammatory or autoimmune conditions, really, you know, I really want to reassure the families that it's not something really you could have done differently or prevented. You know, unfortunately, there has to be some sort of environmental external trigger that makes your immune system do that. You know, what's a common trigger for immune system anyway, right, in normal situation? So, for example, like we said in the beginning, infections. So infections will trigger your immune system to become more active as it should. So not uncommonly, there are, you know, quite a bit of patients that we see that sometimes we can trace back to, things started happening a few weeks after I was sick with this type of thing. But sometimes we can't even explain. Sometimes it just, you know, happens. And that's why we said it's relatively rare to see these type of autoimmune conditions in younger children, like, you know, before puberty, because they really haven't been exposed to much, really, relatively talking, in terms of outside or external or environmental exposures.
Right. So is that true for the others that we've discussed so far as prevention, arthritis, fibromyalgia, really nothing you can do to prevent it?
Okay. Yeah, no. So like the juvenile arthritis, the lupus, which are autoimmune diseases, it is rather challenging to prevent because it's just something that the body might be just hardwired to do, right? Now, with fibromyalgia, I did want to make an important clarification of that. That is not an autoimmune disease, but a rheumatologist ends up seeing a lot of them because how they present with musculoskeletal, joint, muscle aches, body pain, you know. But it is important to distinguish that it's not an autoimmune condition. Okay. It is really a condition wherein your nerves are just not functioning properly. Now, interestingly, with fibromyalgia, you might, you know, what triggers that or what's that initial inciting event? A lot of times it might be some injury that leads the kid to get sidelined, right? It's something that throws the kid off their normal routine. It could be an injury, could be an illness. It could be even sort of like emotional stressor, maybe some trouble in school or, you know, moving to a different place, or maybe some, you know, emotional upheaval happening in the family or the home life. So I guess, is that technically preventable? I guess in a way.
But you have no way of knowing.
Yeah, it is rather challenging, right? But the interesting thing is with fibromyalgia, there is something important that, you know, families can do. And that is to, of course, after seeing your specialist, your doctor, and as long as other important things have been excluded that might potentially explain the pain, if there's nothing that comes after, you know, doing lab work and clinical testing and evaluation, they can actually start and in a way get their child getting better by encouraging them to move, you know, get active so that we, you know, that in doing so, they tell the body, hey, nothing's wrong with you. You're not injured. So let's slowly get back into how we were before, get back into the groove of things, get moving. And you know what? Speaking of that, moving and exercise, physical activity is also very good for the other autoimmune condition we discussed, like juvenile arthritis. So there are a lot of things that families and the patients themselves can do even before seeing a doctor.
Talking with Dr. Anna Carmela S. Girinella, pediatric rheumatologist at Hackensack Meridian Health. In keeping with our theme of, you know, diseases that are usually considered adult-related but may be found in children, what about gout?
Ah, so that is primarily, you know, a condition that happens in adults. The very rare instance, perhaps, that we may see a child, and I will tell you, in the, you know, more over 15 years I've been doing this, I've only seen one child with gout, and that was in an instance where the child had an underlying kidney condition to begin with, because what happens in gout is you have an excess sort of level of the uric acid, right? So in children, that usually isn't a problem. But if, say, for example, they have a problem clearing that out or restoring the balance of those uric acid levels in your body, such as in someone with a kidney disease, then we might find it. But that is primarily an adult condition.
Okay. And what, could you just explain what causes it and if it is, again, preventable?
The main issue with gout is that it is sort of, it leads to, right, very painful inflammation in your joints. And typically we say the common joint that we know it affects is that big toe joint, which can really be a problem because, you know, you walk on it all the time. But what it what happens is there is an issue where, you know, you have some imbalance in this substance in your body called uric acid. And when there's too much of that, it can cause like crystals to form, like too much uric acid when they come together forms crystals, and that can usually build up in joints and fluids and tissue in your body. So that's what's actually causing inflammation. You have just too much gout. Uric acid buildup in patients with gout. So usually, having high levels of uric acid, like I said, in children, which is super rare, like I said, maybe they have an issue with clearing out uric acid, like if they have a kidney problem. But, you know, in older people, unfortunately, you know, being obese or having other certain medical conditions like high blood pressure, diabetes, and like I said, poor kidney function can all make someone prone to gout. And not to mention also consuming certain other foods that encourage sort of your gout, your uric acid levels to go up, like alcohol and food and drinks high in certain sugars.
Okay, let's try one more. Is it common in children? First of all, what is it? And is it common in children or more common in adults? And that vasculitis.
Yes. So I would say there are different kinds of vasculitis.
Okay.
And there are certain forms of vasculitis that would be more common in children. And perhaps some of the listeners might be familiar with it because a lot of these autoimmune vasculitis. So vasculitis is inflammation in the small to medium sized blood vessels in the body. And that would be, for example, in children, HSP, which stands for Henoch-Schönlein purpura, or Kawasaki disease. And that is relatively something commonly seen in children. Now, in adults, though, there's other types of vasculitis called ANCA-associated vasculitis. We do see it in children, too, but it tends to be slightly more common in adults. So to answer your question, it depends. Certain types more common in kids, certain types more common in adults.
Fair enough. All right, but before we wrap up, I want to ask this because you deal with children. You know, parents are very concerned whenever they have to take their child to any doctor for any reason.
Of course.
But when a child has to see a specialist or pediatric rheumatologist, and they don't even know what that is, you say sometimes. They have to ask you, wait, how do you first introduce yourself to set them at ease and relieve some of the anxiety?
Sure. So I do like to start the visit by actually eliciting from the family first. So, hi, after that general introduction. So I said, so what's your understanding of what brings you here today, right? Mm-hmm. Because that is a common thing you'll hear your doctor say. So what brings you here, today? So now when there is that initial concern that, I don't even know why I'm here and I don't even know what your specialty is. So after explaining what it is that we do, I do say so. To be fair, I also want to say that before a person comes to see me, I'd like to say that I've already done some pre-review and I know why they're there, but
right.
I also want to get the sense if they have some other concerns that haven't been relayed to me by the referring provider. So, and then I say, well, my understanding is your doctor saw this in the blood work, or my understanding is, your child has been having these unexplained pains, which led your doctor to check these labs. And so I'm here today, but I did want to emphasize to you that just because you have an abnormal lab, some of those labs might actually be found in healthy people. So we're here today to try to sort things out, So that's the general sort of script, if you will, I follow.
Okay, great. Thank you. Dr. Anna Carmela S. Girinella, pediatric rheumatologist at Hackensack Meridian Health. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us this morning.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure to speak with you.
If you'd like more information, you can go to jfkmc.org, or you can reach out to the Pediatric Multispecialty Practice at JFK at 848-205-2620. That's 848-205-2620. You can get directly to Dr. Girinella. For a podcast of this show, you can go to foxsportsradionewjersey.com. JFK Spotlight on Health, brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health. Keep getting better. I'm Joel Katz. Until next week.